from the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And, oh, what an interesting hour of the program we have for you this hour. A lot to dig into. I mentioned earlier in the program, earlier tonight, I was contacted by a man who apparently works in the aerospace engineering field, and he passed along some documents to me that look like they are, or at least at one point have been, top secret documents. Let's see. It says right here, national security information, top secret for your eyes only, et cetera, et cetera. And it has to do with aliens here on planet Earth. I'm trying to determine whether or not to read any of this to you on the air. I have already taken measures to have this sent to some of my contacts who are experts when it comes to verifying documents to see if this is real or not. But at this point, I'm leaning toward at least reading some key passages to you on the air tonight. Who knows? Could be my last broadcast. But hey, what good timing, because tomorrow night there is going to be a major special on TV that also has to do with elements of government disclosure. And that's because that tomorrow, Sunday, July 20th, 2014, is the 45th anniversary of the first manned lunar landing. And in order to celebrate that, the Sci-Fi Channel is going to debut their original two-hour documentary called Aliens on the Moon, The Truth Exposed. And this is a show that not only includes interviews with astronauts like Buzz Aldrin and Dr. Edgar Mitchell, but also footage and images of strange things on the moon that have never been televised before. Now, I did not make this documentary, so I have not seen it. I, however, was asked to be interviewed for the documentary, and I'm going to explain why that is in a moment. But I've been told that my participation is featured throughout the documentary, as well as some of the images that I'm going to be talking about this hour. First off, let me give you a bit deeper insight into what my connection in general is. And some of you know this already. If you do, then consider this to be a refresher. If not, then you'll find this quite intriguing. I have always been really interested in science, and I was one of those geeky little kids who was producing my own science experiments. I had my own little lab at my house, and I was always especially intrigued with electrostatics and just electrical phenomena in general. And when I was in middle school at Irwin Middle School there in Asheville, North Carolina, one of my great teachers in science was a lady named Miss Kelly Crisp. And she took an interest in me because I was always doing experiments on my own. And, in fact, I was frequently asked, even when I was a student, to go to other people's classrooms and to demonstrate Leyden jars and you know, Van de Graaff generators and that type of thing, even for students that were much older than me. And one day we had a really special treat in class because Miss Crisp had somehow, through a friend of a friend, gotten access to a scientist in Western North Carolina named Charles A. Yost. And Charles Yost was sort of a local celebrity because he was one of the scientists who worked on the Apollo missions for NASA as a spacecraft designer. And he later went on to be inducted into the NASA Hall of Fame. I believe he was inducted in 1998. And that was because he was one of the key inventors of what they call memory foam, what is now branded as Tempur-Pedic memory foam. That was originally created for use in space shuttles and similar things that were space-oriented. Now they're used not only by the everyday consumer, as a matter of fact, that's what my pillow is made out of, but it's used a lot in the medical field. So Charles Yost, he, toward the end of his life, had decided to set up a laboratory and some companies in Western North Carolina. And his laboratory, he had a couple laboratories. He had one that was kind of like the private one at his house, and then he had one that was more accessible to his employees and staff. And Miss Crisp was able to, and I know in retrospect how rare this is, convince him to come and do a little science demo for us, because Charles was not the most outgoing person. He was a very private man, very reclusive. So I've always thought it was amazing that she pulled this off. But he came into class, and he brought a Tesla coil with him. And I'd never seen a Tesla coil in person, and so he fired that thing off and told us about how it worked, and he did a number of other experiments. And Miss Crisp said to him, "Hey, well, if you've got some time after class, I've got this one student, Joshua Warren, and I think that, you know, he'd really like to talk to you, and you guys might have some stuff in common, et cetera." So sure enough, I started talking to Charles Yost, and I wanted to build a Tesla coil. And he said, "Well, I'll be happy to help you," because, mind you guys, this was in a pre-internet age. I'm now, you know, I'm old enough that I did not go through school with the internet. And finding books on how to build Tesla coils and stuff like that was not so easy for a kid who was more or less in the Leicester area of Western North Carolina. So he gave me his phone number, and I would call him and harass him with all kinds of questions. And I eventually built a Tesla coil, and he wanted to see it when I was done. And so I brought it to him, and little by little, he started inviting me to assist him with various types of experiments at his lab. And this went on for 15 years, well into my adult years. And during that period of time, I mean, I saw all kinds of amazing things. I was able to learn stuff that has influenced me throughout the rest of my life. And he was the publisher of a journal, science journal called Electric Spacecraft, and I'm very honored and proud to say that some of the research that I helped produce made the cover of one of those final issues of Electric Spacecraft. Well, anyway, one day I was talking to Charles, and now this guy was a very straight-up technical engineering science guy, okay? He wasn't the kind of guy who would go on and would speculate wildly about paranormal stuff. And he was kind of intimidating because he was so smart. And so I was always hesitant to ask him the question that you eventually ask anybody who worked on the Apollo missions. "Hey, do you think we really went to the moon?" You know, you got to throw that out there. You got to toss it out there at some point. So I asked him that question one day, and he sat back, and he was very quiet for a minute. And he said, "Well, I think we went to the moon." He said, "But I think there was a lot we weren't told." And I said, "Why is that?" And he said, "Well, for one thing," he goes, I'd been an engineer for X amount of years." And he goes, "Nothing ever goes right the first time." And he said, "Everything went so smoothly. It was just amazing to us in engineering how well everything supposedly went." And then he goes, "But after it happened, after they made it there, and we started getting, you know, footage coming back through, we started noticing things that we couldn't explain." And I said, "Well, like what?" And Charles says, "Well, come here into my office. I want to show you some film footage." Oh, man, was this exciting, right? So I went into his office, sat down, and he popped the VHS tape in there. And here I am looking at the lunar surface. And basically what you are seeing on, or what I was seeing on TV, was some type of a camera, presumably on a spacecraft, at a vantage point high above the lunar surface. And as it's flying across, you can see the blue planet Earth in the background, and you see the lunar landscape just, you know, moving past the camera. And then you see something very, very weird. Now, before I continue and tell you what was on the film, let me tell you a little bit about the mission on which this film was captured. This was from Apollo 8. And Apollo 8 was the very first mission that ever sent men to the moon. They didn't land on Apollo 8. They just orbited around it a few times. And that was an amazing moment in American history. This was in December of 1968. And you have to consider this. If you don't know this, think about this for a moment. Before this, the farthest that any human had ever been from the surface of the Earth was 800 miles. And then all of a sudden, NASA says, hey, let's go 250,000 miles to the moon, send three guys around it a few times, and then send them 250,000 miles back. And this thing got greenlit. So that was the leap that we made in technology in 1968, going from 800 miles to 250,000 miles. Think about how scary it would have been to be one of these three astronauts. Their names were Frank Borman, James Lovell, and William Anders. To be one of those three who gets put into a little capsule and fired off. And, you know, when you get out there, there's no 911. You're screwed if something goes wrong. If you saw the movie Apollo 13, you have a sense of that. And furthermore, they didn't know what they were going to see on the moon. Nobody really knew exactly what the moon was all about. You can sit around and speculate and theorize all you want, but they were going to go up there. So these guys went up to the moon. And they orbited around it. The whole thing lasted 6 days and 3 hours. And one of the things that's most memorable about this is that they were there on Christmas Eve of 1968 and actually did a special Christmas Eve broadcast of live footage of the lunar surface while passage from Genesis was read. Very touching, amazing moment for history in general. It is from that mission, Apollo 8, that this footage was captured that Yost showed me that I'm going to talk to you about when we return from this break. This is the program where we dig into the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary, the downright weird. It's called Speaking of Strange. Tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You can give them a call now. Write this down at 828-298-5402. Or go to speakingofstrange.com for a link. Speaking of Strange will return right after this. A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Can't find
Isle of Enchantment, Puerto Rico, hitchhiking the ET highway. I am your host, the Wizard of Weird, Joshua P. Warren. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, brought to you by Wright Coin Shop. You can go to WrightsCoinShop.com. That's W-R-I-G-H-T-S, WrightsCoinShop.com. Or simply enough, wherever you are, call Miss Shelley Wright at 828-298-5402. That is 828-298-5402. Okay, Apollo 8, 1968, Christmas time. Three astronauts are up there orbiting the moon. They didn't touch down on that mission, but they were shooting the first footage that humans had ever taken of the moon from that close distance. And so now, all these years later, here is NASA Hall of Fame engineer Charles A. Yost showing me this footage. Now, Charles Yost is no longer with us. He passed away in 2005. And this was about 2003, I believe. So I'm watching the footage, and as I see the lunar landscape passing by while the camera is flying overhead, at first there is a little object that looks kind of like a black hair sticking up from the surface of the moon. And as the camera continues moving forward, getting closer and closer and closer, this little black object gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So it's changing perspective as the camera is moving closer. And right as the camera is about to pass over top of this thing, it appears to release a little jet of smoke that kind of drifts to the right for a second and then disappears. And then footage ends. Now, I said to Yost, "What the heck was that?" And he grinned and said, "You tell me." He then explained that that footage was shot from 70 miles above the lunar surface, meaning that if this was some type of, a smokestack protruding from the moon, it would presumably have to be hundreds of feet tall, maybe even over 1,000 feet tall. Now, what's really fascinating is that for years, there have been people questioning whether or not the moon is a natural or unnatural object. For example, we've talked about this on the show before, when a large object like a meteor hits the moon, or even one of the heavy lunar landers, the moon rings like a bell for about an hour, as if it's hollow, almost like a big Death Star. And there have been plenty of people who have surmised that maybe the moon is some kind of a big Death Star. Either it was a craft that was put there, or it was a body that was sort of hollowed out and mined and used for one purpose or another. So he showed me this, and of course, my mind is blown, and I said, "May I please post this on my website?" And he said, "Sure, go ahead." So I posted the footage on my website, and shortly thereafter, I was asked to appear on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. And so for the first time, I talked about this before a national audience. And all of a sudden, oh boy, did it hit the fan. Obviously, we got tons and tons of hits on the website. And after that, for about 6 months, there was this massive campaign on discussion boards all over the internet of people saying, "Oh, this has got to be fake. This is bullcrap. Joshua Warren's a fraud, blah, 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 blah," just saying every kind of demeaning thing. There were one or two people in particular who were posting this kind of material. And after about a month of this, I realized that this person, and I won't use the screen name, who was one of the leaders in posting this stuff, seemed to never sleep. So it didn't matter what time of day something was posted, there was an immediate rebuttal anytime 24 hours around the clock, almost like this wasn't a person but maybe an organization. And that's when I, for the first time in my life, started being followed. And at first I was wondering, am I just being paranoid? Because I started noticing that when every time I would leave my house, there were these weird guys who would pop up wherever I was, and I could tell who they were because all of them wore the same kind of wristwatch. It was a big, clunky, bizarre wristwatch, and these guys would always act really kind of like odd and unnatural, and sometimes I would see them, like, you know, messing around on their watch, and this is, in, you know, again, a day and age before cell phones turned into smartphone technology. And my telephone started getting all these weird clicks and strange interference. And one day I just picked up my telephone to make a phone call. And when I picked up my telephone, I heard two men having a conversation on my telephone. And I sat there and listened to them for a second. And they were just sort of like bantering about some kind of like very weird, just kind of mundane stuff. It was something about like what some guy's wife had said when he was driving to work or whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, one of the guys goes, wait a minute, and then click, it was silent. So at that point, I called the phone company, and I said, I believe that somebody's tapping my telephone. And it took them forever, like a week, you know, to send a lineman out. And finally, this guy comes out to my house at the time. And this guy was one of the weirdest, like, shadiest guys I've ever seen. He would not look me in the eye. He seemed completely awkward and uncomfortable in his role. He had very tender-looking hands, not the hands of a lineman. And I asked him straightforward, and again, that was weird. I'm standing there looking at this guy, and he won't look me in the eye. And I said, I think my phone might be tapped. And he just completely ignored that and just started talking about, you know, something else regarding phone service. And I said, well, okay, but how would I know if my phone were being tapped? And he ignored it again. And it was almost becoming comical because I'm standing here looking at this guy, and I was like, I'm going to just keep asking this guy this question until he responds. I asked him half a dozen times, and I actually was laughing right in this guy's face because it was so weird how uncomfortable he was. And finally, the guy looked at me, and he goes, well, for one thing, we don't call it tapping.
Oh.
He goes, we would call it, you know, some other term. And he goes, you would have to file some type of paper with Homeland Security if you wanted to address that issue.
What year was this?
This would have been 2000, either around 2003, 2004, about 10 years ago, maybe a little over 10 years ago. And so this kind of stuff continued to escalate. And I knew there was something very, very, you know, weird about all of it. But I didn't have any sort of follow-up, really. I mean, all I had was the footage, and that was it. And then one day, I got contacted out of the blue by a person claiming that she worked with NASA, and she was like, keep doing what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. We're, you know, there are a lot of us here who want this stuff out there, and, you know, you need to just – keep digging. You're going to be amazed what you find. And so I kept digging. And I even contacted NASA through some other ways to verify that this person who had contacted me works for NASA. But after that contact dropped off. Well, interestingly enough, and I've got some papers here in front of me, you might ask yourself, okay, well, why? Why is this so secret? What, you know, what is really going on the moon that we're not supposed to know about? Well, I have some thoughts on that I'm going to share with you when we come back. And also, I want to tell you about some actual footage of what appears to be an alien mummy they found on the moon. Now, if you've never heard of this before, you're not alone. I will explain when we return. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright Coin Shop in Asheville. This is Speaking of Strange. Show where the unusual becomes usual. I am Joshua P. Warren, and I also want to make sure you realize one of the reasons we are able to bring the show to you when I am here in Puerto Rico and Sam is there in Asheville is because of Christopher's Computers. In fact, we are using a Christopher computer right now for this transmission. Christopher is a friend of mine. He's a friend of Sam's, and he is the best computer technician in Asheville, North Carolina. It doesn't matter if you just want to get your computer updated or if you are concerned, you know, there's a virus or you want a new computer. I know it can be intimidating because you always have a feeling somebody's going to try to rip you off and you don't know who to trust when it comes to computer technology. Well, I give you my word, you contact Christopher and you will get a square deal. Okay, he is an upstanding guy and he knows his stuff, and he might even be able to help you if you're not in the Asheville area. His website is simple enough, christophers.computers.com. Of course, there's no apostrophe in that, christophers.computers.com, or you can call Christopher there at 828-670-9800. Now, when you contact them, make sure that you say you heard about them on Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren, and who knows, maybe he'll be able to do something a little extra special.
I was going to say, like, what happens if you say that? Is it like Pee-wee's Playhouse with, like, the secret word? Is everyone going to go, ah!
You just have to do it and find out.
We'll find out.
Yeah. Again, here's the number, folks. If you have a computer issue, go to ChristophersComputers.com or call 828-670-9800. Now, of course, the reason we're talking about aliens and anomalies on the moon right now is that, well, tomorrow night at 9 p.m. on the Sci-Fi Channel, you'll be able to see a special original two-hour documentary called Aliens on the Moon, The Truth Exposed. And I was interviewed for this program, and they're going to show some of this footage that I was telling you about that presents what appears to be what looks like a smokestack on the moon. Now, I'm going to tell all of you how you can get a sneak peek at this. If you go right now to joshuapwarren.com, at the top of the homepage, you will be able to see a GIF of this footage, and if you click that GIF, you'll be able to get all the background information. Now, sometimes when I go on a lot of these radio shows at once, like Coast to Coast AM, Darkness Radio, I do Speaking of Strange, I get so many millions of hits that my site gets slammed and it gets locked up and you can't get through. So if you go to joshuapwarren.com and you can't make it through, I'll give you an alternative way of seeing it. Just go to wishingmachineproject.com, wishingmachineproject.com, and click the news section there, and you'll also find the link. And you can go ahead and see the piece of footage that I'm contributing to this two-hour extravaganza that airs tomorrow night on the Sci-Fi Channel. Now, mind you, when I started looking into why there might be these industrial types of complexes on the moon, one of the things that really impressed me was a news story that I first noticed in 2006. Okay, in 2006, it was announced that Russia at that time had plans to build a base on the moon by 2015 in order to mine a precious substance called helium-3. Now, if you've never heard of this, helium-3, it is a substance, it's a gas, really, that facilitates nuclear fusion. And it said there is enough of this on the moon to power the entire Earth cleanly and efficiently for thousands of years. A single space shuttle load could power the United States for a year. According to one scientist at the Fusion Technology Institute at the University of Wisconsin at Madison, quote, helium-3 fusion energy may be the key to future space exploration and settlement. Helium-3, another scientist goes on to say, helium-3 could be the cash crop for the moon. Right now, and you have to think about this, folks, today, helium-3 would have a cash value of $4 billion a ton in terms of its energy equivalent in oil. So eventually, when the moon inevitably becomes an independent country, it's going to be trading helium-3. So we Earthlings may be already up there trying to mine this stuff, but it's very possible that there have been people who have been trying to mine it for a long time. And in this documentary that airs tomorrow night, you're going to see something that is pretty dang wild. Let me put it to you this way, okay? When they asked me to be interviewed for this documentary, I thought I was only going to be talking about my own particular experience with this piece of footage from Apollo 8 with the smokestack that I told you about. Well, when I made it to the set the day before, one of the producers sent me about 50 pages of information saying, these are topics that we are going to cover in this documentary, and we would like for you to read over all these topics, and if you'd like, give us your opinion. And I was happy to do that, but I was like, man, you know, I got like one day to go through a ton of material. But I was sitting there in my hotel room. I was in West Palm Beach, Florida. And I just, you know, spent a whole day looking through this. And what I can tell you is that, honestly, some of the images that they're going to present to you in this documentary, I don't feel are that compelling. To me, it's not that different than seeing the man in the moon. I mean, come on, that's one of the cliches. You look up at the moon and you see a big man smiling there. So the moon is already infamous for producing these forms that create illusions. And so I don't think that every image that you're going to see that people have gone through and extracted and picked out and claimed are factories or bridges or towers are necessarily those artificial things. But there's some footage that they're going to present that, if real, is absolutely earth-shattering and mind-boggling. And I think the one that stands out is the footage that supposedly shows an actual mummified alien body. Well, let me remind you, okay, right now this show on the History Channel, Ancient Aliens, is doing very well. It's popular. It's been in numerous seasons. And, of course, this show is about the idea that if Earth was visited thousands of years ago by aliens, that we may still have fragments of their visitation, bits and pieces that have made it, that have lasted. And if that's the case, well, these are very rugged artifacts that have lasted through all kinds of severe weather and erosion. But on the moon, there is virtually no atmosphere. A lot of people used to believe there was no atmosphere. Well, that's incorrect. There actually is a very, very slight atmosphere. In fact, it includes sodium and potassium, which are a couple of things not found in Earth's atmosphere. But there's no doubt, NASA even admits, there is an atmosphere there. But it's very, 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 very small or very, very thin. And what that means is that if thousands of years ago aliens visited Earth and they stopped at the moon on the way in or out, the presence, the artifacts, the relics they left behind on the moon may be so well preserved that they look almost like they did thousands of years ago because they haven't had to contend with the same weather conditions. So according to some of the footage that you're going to see in this special, okay, the Apollo missions were originally scheduled all the way up through Apollo 20. However, the last one they did was Apollo 17. They didn't do Apollo 18, 19, and 20, supposedly because of budgetary restrictions and political problems. Well, there is an astronaut who has come forth saying that there was an Apollo 18, 19, and 20, and that he was one of the astronauts on the mission, and that the reason that this is secret is that every time they were going up to the moon, they kept finding these ruins of some kind of an old civilization. And finally, they found so many ruins that they said, we got to go in and explore these things. And instead of trying to continue making up cover stories, instead they just said, we're not going to do these anymore, and then they did them privately. And when you watch this documentary tomorrow night, you are going to see footage that supposedly comes from one of those missions where they found this big, crazy sort of factory-like building. And they went inside and they discovered a very well-preserved mummified woman, but she looks a little different than a human. She has a bump between her eyes that almost looks like a third eye and some kind of a strange apparatus around her face. And I've watched this over and over and over, and I can't tell if this is real or not. If it is real, it's earth-shattering. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to read to you some passages from this top secret document that I received tonight about aliens on Earth. It's the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. 2 on tonight. Speaking of strange, I'm Joshua P. Warren. Next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. That's when we dig into the more outrageous and controversial news, not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So you can determine whether or not you want to stick around for that. And we've been talking about aliens on the moon this hour because tomorrow night, 9 p.m. on the Sci-Fi Channel, the two-hour special Aliens on the Moon, The Truth Exposed, is going to be broadcast. And never before televised footage will be shown. Hopefully this will be really good. I'm kind of amazed that some of this stuff is going to make it to TV. So I'm supposedly in it. We'll see.
if we don't talk to you anymore after tonight, Josh, just know that we love you.
Thank you, Sam. I love you, too. Now, I did get contacted just a few hours ago before showtime by a man who sent me some documents that are supposed to be top-secret government documents, and I'm in the process of having these things verified. But I just want to read you one little piece of this document. One of them here is dated November of 1952, and it's a document that was presented for Dwight D. Eisenhower, for President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower. And it looks very official, and it says on 24th of June 1947, a civilian pilot flying over the Cascade Mountains in the state of Washington observed 9 flying disc-shaped aircraft traveling in formation at a high rate of speed, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so I read that, and I'm like, all right, well, I know what that is. That's the Kenneth Arnold sighting of 1947. Everybody knows about that. And then it goes on to say, little of substance was learned about the objects until a local rancher reported that one had crashed in a remote region of New Mexico, located approximately 75 miles northwest of the Roswell Army Air Base, now Walker Field. Document goes on to say, on the 7th of July, 1947, a secret operation was begun to assure recovery of the wreckage of this object for scientific study. During the course of this operation, aerial reconnaissance discovered that 4 small human-like beings had apparently ejected from the craft at some point before it exploded. These had fallen to earth about 2 miles east of the wreckage site. All 4 were dead and badly decomposed due to action by predators and exposure to the elements during the approximately 1 week time period which had elapsed before their discovery. A special scientific team took charge of removing these bodies for study. The wreckage of the craft was removed to several different locations, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on here to say about these bodies. An analysis of the 4 dead occupants was arranged. It was the conclusion of the group on the 30th of November, 1947, that although these creatures are human-like in appearance, the biological and evolutionary processes responsible for their development has apparently been quite different from that observed or postulated in Homo sapiens. Dr. Bronk's team has suggested the term extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBEs. He has adopted as the standard form of reference for these creatures until there is a more definitive designation that can be agreed upon. Since it is virtually certain that these craft do not originate in any country on Earth, considerable speculation is centered around what their point of origin might be and how they got here. Mars was and remains a possibility, although some scientists, most notably Dr. Menzel, considered it more likely they were dealing with beings from another solar system entirely. So if this is indeed what it appears to be, a top-secret national security report for Dwight D. Eisenhower prepared November of 1952, well, there you go. 4 bodies that ejected from the wreckage. They were chewed upon by coyotes and whatnot. that come from another system, extraterrestrial biological entities, EBEs. We're going to take a break. When we come back, like I said before, get ready. It's going to be time when we dig into some of the more sordid and seedy material, if that's your cup of tea. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You can call them at 828-298-5402 or find the link at speakingofstrange.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around for more right after this on Speaking of Strange.